This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 3, String Contention, Objections, and Disputes held on the 23rd of May, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it back over to our chair, Karen Day. Please begin.
Thank you, Julie. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. This is Karen Day. We will begin today if staff would put up our slide deck, and we have our agenda slide, which the agenda has also been typed into the note pod to the left of your screens. We will begin by just briefly going over the agenda and seeing if everyone has any updates or revisions they'd like to make for that. Then we will, the next item on the agenda is an update of our SOIs and our plenary update from our co-chair, Aubrey Doria. Then we will take a look at some history of community priority in ICANN, and which is a follow-up to some requests that we had when we discussed communities earlier in our work track. And staff has been very valuable in helping us dig out some of the history of how communities and community priority came to be in the 2012 round. After we review that history and get any additional input anybody can share with us, we'd like to take a few minutes to just run through some questions, some very baseline questions about community. I sent them out in the agenda to try and see if we can get a sense of where we are as a work track on the issue of community, on some very basic questions like, you know, do we want to keep community priority in the second round or in the next round or the next procedure, whatever it may be, just to sort of document and help us focus our work going forward, especially after we return from Johannesburg meeting. Then the last thing on our agenda today would be a topic introduction for what we have teed up for our next meeting in 2 weeks, which is the accountability mechanisms, which would be the PIC-DRP and the PDDRP processes, and staff will lead us through that. And then any other business that we may need to add. So I'll open it up now to see if anyone has anything that they'd like to comment on the agenda, or if anyone had anything for consideration under any other business. Not seeing any hands and not seeing anyone typing in the chat, then we will move on to item 2 on our agenda. Does anyone have any updates to their statements of interest that have been filed or that need to be filed that they need to make the group aware of?
This is GJ Levine. I just updated my title on my SOI. I don't know if that's something I need to announce here. Or not.
Okay, thank you, Gigi.
Sure.
Is that something you'd care to share with us, or do you want us to all go look at it?
Sure. It's that pharmacy program manager.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Anyone else? Seeing no hands and no further comments, I will ask Aubrey Doria, co-chair of the full work group, to come in and give us an update on where we are in the full PDP working group and where we will be going in the next phase of our work. Aubrey?
Hi. Thanks. This is Aubrey speaking. Sorry if my voice is a little scratchy. It's actually the first time I've spoken today. Anyway. Okay. So in the plenary, what we basically did is, since we've been having such a slow startup in the drafting teams on our overarching issues, we decided to devote most of the meeting to one of those and basically walked through the current base document that we have for different TLD types. And basically had a good discussion on that, and actually, as most of you have probably noticed, and a discussion that stretched out into the list, which was in many ways gratifying, since we're so often asking, please take the issue to the list, and it did. The issue did run into one of our second issues, which is, of course, the applications assessed in rounds and such, but it was good to see discussions actually happening on a list. And that was pretty much the focus of the plenary. We'll be doing that for each of the topics as we go forward. We're at a point now where we really do have to start nailing down, you know, we're doing about the CC1 questions. We've discussed, we had our discussions, we've had comments, and now we really do need to bring that one to start approaching conclusions. The other thing I wanted to bring up is an idea that you know, we started looking at in the leadership group, of basically looking at the sub-teams, all four of these, and sort of saying, okay, how do we bring this work to a close? How do we move? So, and the way it's being described, the way I'm certainly describing it, is that we've pretty much finished in all of them, not completely, but in all of them, the first sort of what I call the blue sky through the themes, or what Jeff calls the pros and cons of all of the topics that we're going through. Between now and Johannesburg, hopefully we'll close out the list so everything will have been through it first. We've had our CC2 comments. They're received. So we'll now go into basically a second pass, going through using, you know, where we got to in our discussions with the pros and the cons and the blue sky, and the analysis of the comments that we've received, and try to move the discussion forward. Well, the way I'm sort of visualizing is there'll actually be one-third cycle through this, unless we resolve everything in the second cycle, which would surprise me, where we'll look at each one of the issues and we'll say, okay, do we have a consensus in the sub-team that we need to change from what the previous policy and or the AGB and or the contract say? Do we need to change? Do we have a consensus on making a change? Do we have a consensus on what change we would make if we were making one? And try to zero in on each one of those, coming up with our sort of first approximation. We've got to get to the point then where that gets delivered to the full meeting, and those from all of the full meetings of the four sub-teams sort of get integrated into our initial recommendations. So that's just to give people of, I see us as having entered sort of very much the middle period of this, and we're in, and now we sort of got to finish up the comments analysis and move to our third slot, which is how do we get our recommendations out. So that was just a quick view on where we're going. Karen asked specifically that I bring that one to you all, so I did. Open to questions, but I'll be talking about this a lot more in the full meeting and on all the sub-teams and for a while. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. One of the reasons that I asked Aubrey to run through that is something that I would like to bring up to the work track to keep in sort of the corner of your mind as we wrap up our initial pass through and we start to go into the CC2 comments and add that input to our work is, are there issues as we are going through this where are there places where we are just really stuck and we want to go and seek counsel from the entire work group, from the plenary on an issue? That opportunity, I believe, will be made available to us as the plenary continues along while we are in our CC2 input phase and during also the third phase where we're trying to come to work track consensus. So please, at any time, if you feel like we're just absolutely stuck or we need a wider input from the plenary, make note of that and let us be aware of that. And then we can work with the leadership team to schedule an appropriate time with the plenary community to, sorry for my alarm there, to discuss that with a wider audience. Aubrey, is that Newhan?
If I could jump in again, this is Aubrey.
Yes, please.
Yes. Yes, it was. And yes, I had realized as you were starting to speak that I had forgotten to mention that aspect. So I definitely want to back you up that as we go through this second pass, if there are issues, as was said, you know, going to ask the sub-team or you know, the work track leader to that, you know, to sort of write that up in a single page. And then, yes, we would bring those issues into the full meeting agenda for broader discussions on them, and that then the work track could take back and hopefully it would help. So thanks for bringing that up. I had forgotten that element that we had spoken about it, and I just wanted to back you up on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. I appreciate that. And now I just have one more general topic that I want, if I may, put Steve or Emily on the spot and just get a quick update on CC2. As we know, the comment period was closing yesterday. Tentatively on our timeline, we had that staff would have their report around June the 12th. And just wanted to get an update for the group, Steve. Emily, if you could, is that still our target date for having the staff report on CC2 comments issued, or do we anticipate some late comments that might delay that process?
Hi, Karen. Thanks. This is Steve Chan from staff. The target is indeed still the 12th of June. At the moment, we have 21 responses. It's a diverse set of responses. We have gotten word that a few responses are likely to come in a day or two after the deadline. So we'll do our best to make sure that those are included in any summary and analysis documents that we create. Right now, what staff is doing is trying to organize the comments, sort them, and put them in logical buckets. So for that means putting them by work track first off, and then from there, breaking them down into smaller chunks per topic, and then perhaps to sub-questions if there's sub-questions. I think most of the questions, or most of the topics did have sub-questions. So we're currently going through all the comments. They'll be put into a Google Sheet or something like an Excel sheet. But, yeah, that's what we're working on right now. Don't necessarily have an ETA exactly, but our drop dead target that we're looking at is 12 June. Does that help?
Yep, great. Thank you, Steve. And I will note for those of you that were later joining the call than some others, I have put a link in the chat to where the most recent comments, which are the bulk of them, that came in this month are located if any of you are very eager or curious and want to go ahead and start scanning through. I did take a look at a couple. I looked at the GAC comments, and couple of other ones, and there is some good input for our group to consider. So just be aware that that link is in the chat. Now, unless anybody has anything else, we will move into the discussion of the history of community priority as was used in the 2012 round. Staff, if we could go on to the next slide. Okay, so as we were having our discussions on community earlier in the process, we seem to not have a level playing field that we were all working on with regard to our knowledge of the history of how this community concept, community priority concept came to be. So staff very diligently went back and basically reviewed all the meeting transcripts of the group that was active in the 2005 to 2009 timeframe that was forming the what we came to have in the 2012 round. I know I saw it in reviewing those transcripts myself. We are fortunate to have many of those same participants in our group today. So please, I would encourage those of you that were actually involved in this process then, which I was not, to speak up and add anything to what I have summarized here. And basically, it seemed that the 2012 round evolved from the prior concept of sponsored TLDs that had been in earlier rounds, whereas a particular interest group would sponsor a top-level domain. And during the discussions in the formation period, the core values and ideas of the 2012 round seem to be these that I have listed here. First, groups of people would want to express shared identity and create specialized spaces using TLDs. That was considered to be a valuable thing for the community and something that should be supported and promoted. Secondly, which I've just alluded to, these spaces are important part of the value of the new TLD program. Some applicants inherently had clearer links to specific groups and association and identities than others. And the view was that the strength of the link should factor into the application evaluation procedure. Some applicants with a strong connection to a community might not be in position to win auction against applicants motivated purely by economics, and therefore it was determined that from a public interest perspective, there should be a way for these applicants to prevail in controlling TLDs associated with their communities. And that is what led to the community priority evaluation, where during the evaluation of the application, if there was contention, a community that was able to pass the evaluation procedures as laid out at the time would then be given a leg ahead of the others in the contention set. Does anyone have anything before I move into the next area that I wanted to review of where we are currently with the and review the policy and the guidelines? Does anyone of you who was involved in that those prior discussions want to add anything about the history of the community priority in the previous round, what the core values were, what the aims were, so that we all have a level playing field of knowing what those aims were so that we can then in turn evaluate whether or not the policy and the implementation serve to meet those values. Okay, not seeing any hands. Seeing Christina is typing. Let's see, I know you were involved in those discussions. No questions. All right, so with that being laid out, and those being the core aims of community priority prior, let's take a look, if we can move on to the next slide, at and just refresh ourselves as to what the current policy and implementation standards are. And recalling that, as the Newman Rule would say, this is what the policy is unless we feel there is distinct need to change it. This is what the policy will be going forward to. Slides are unsynced. I will move my own slide then. Thanks, Steve. Here we are with the current policy. Current policy is basically laid out in two places, implementation guidance F. If there is contention for strings, applicants may resolve contention between them with a pre-established time frame. If there is no mutual agreement, a claim to support a community by one party will be a reason to award priority to that application. If there is no such claim and no mutual agreement, a process will be put in place to enable efficient resolution of the contention. The ICANN board may be used to make the final decision. So here the key item is number two. A claim to support a community by one party will be a reason to award priority to that application. Then we have implementation guidance H. Where an applicant lays claim that the TLD is intended to support a particular community, such as a sponsored TLD or other TLD intended for a specific community, that claim will be taken on trust with the following exceptions. Exception number one, the claim relates to a string that is also subject to another application, and the claim to support a community is being used to gain priority for that application. And then exception two, where a formal objection process is initiated. Under these exceptions, staff evaluators will devise criteria and procedures to investigate these claims. So, when a community, as you recall in the 2012 round, applications were designated one of two ways. You either self-designated as a community application, or you were then, if not, you were then considered to be a standard application. If there was no contention and you were self-designated as a community application, then your self-designation was taken at face value. There was no other investigation, priority, evaluations, or anything. It was simply you were taken on trust that you were representing the community that you claimed, and you moved through the process. And then if no objection was filed, then you were deemed to be in representation of the community that you were claiming to represent. So those are the policies. Then we move into, on the next slide, what the 2012 applicant guidebook discusses. And that is in two places. In Module 1, community-based designations, which I've just referenced briefly, the applicant is expected to demonstrate an ongoing relationship with a clearly delineated community, have applied for a GTLD string strongly and specifically related to the community named in the application, have proposed dedicated registration and use policies for the registrants in its proposed GTLD, including appropriate security verification procedures commensurate with the community-based purpose it has named. And four, have an application endorsed in writing by one or more established institutions representing the community it has named. And I will note that if you go back into the transcripts themselves, there was a great deal of discussion as to what qualified as an established institution representing a community. And I think that was ultimately given a pretty broad usage to allow for flexibilities different types of communities might have different, quote-unquote, established institutions. The next place in the applicant guidebook where we deal with community priority designation is in Module 4, Item 4.2. This is the whole community priority designation procedure. It is very long and involved, and I will encourage you to, if you haven't already, review it on your own. It was obviously too much to put in slides here. But this is the procedure by which the evaluations, community priority evaluations, were done. And this is what I know several of you on the call have previous experience with. And so that's sort of our base. That's the history. That's the policy. Before we move into trying to have some discussion based around sort of our preliminary questions here, does anyone have anything they want to add to my very high-level cursory review of the status today? Okay, seeing none, we will then move to our preliminary questions for today's work. If you will go to slide number 6. Question number 1, and this is really the baseline question. Should communities receive differential treatment in any subsequent procedures? As you will recall, we already have looked at the report issued by the Council of Europe, calling again for not only communities to receive the differential treatment that was in afforded them in the 2012 round, but for a strengthening of that preference. There was also, you may recall, discussion in Copenhagen at the last ICANN meeting. Some were calling, going so far as to calling for a separate community-only round at the front to give communities the first bite at the apple, as it were, to take any names that communities might want first before we open it up to other applicants. So let's just start with that base question and try and get a sense of where we are as a work track, and do we feel that communities should receive differential treatment in subsequent procedures, or do we feel that in subsequent procedures, community applications should be one amongst many possible types of applications? Anyone want to weigh in on that? Do we have an opinion on that? Yes, Gigi, go ahead, please.
Well, it seems to me that that whether it's one of many types or, you know, or a standalone, that at least the special provisions that were put in place in 2012 would stand, you know, regardless of whether there are other categories of applications.
Okay, thanks, Gigi. That's I've understood you correctly. A vote for, at a minimum, staying where we were with in 2012. Greg, I see your hand next.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. First, I think we need to look back between today and 2012 and try to make a lessons learned analysis. I think that many of the goals of the community priority were laudable goals and continue to be so. Whether it's the implementation or human nature, the reality has been less than ideal, really less than satisfactory in many cases. I think both from the view of communities and from the view of other registries, certainly from the view of consumers, end users, brands, etc. I'm struck by the fact that when it's not a contention set issue, and of course that goes to the whole issue of rounds and first come, first served, I don't want to get us off on that tangent. When it's not a contention set issue, whether something's a community or not is not particularly controversial. I guess then the question then becomes, you know, what are we giving those community applicants? But when it's a contention set issue, it gets into a whole other set of problems. And I would not want to see us simply replicate what we had for the first round or the most recent round, because I think it was fraught with problems. And we have, you know, some applications that are, you know, still not resolved, you know, 5 years on. We have others that where community priority was used in creative ways, and you know, overall, and the idea of a separate round for communities raises all the same questions, but worse, in the sense of how that would relate to potential contention sets. You know, if we had two companies with the name Acme, let's say, and one of them declared that they were applying on a community basis for the community of Acme consumers, and the other one didn't even apply in that round, that's kind of a slam dunk. Yet, you know, the question is that even what we intended by a community in the first place? So I think the chances for gaming just go up exponentially if there is a separate round, unless we somehow figure out a way to limit community priority to in some more functional way and define communities better. And I kind of despair on that. If anybody can think of any qualification process that has managed to separate a hot dog from not hot dog in terms of communities in a way that really has been decent, fair, reasonably quick. I mean, we can't do DNA tests. That's the only thing I can think of that's managed to separate, you know, to prove whether somebody is or isn't part of a community or whether a community exists or not. On the other hand, you know, looking at how, for instance, American Indian tribes Native American tribes are qualified by the U.S. government, that's an example that we definitely don't want to go toward. I somehow fear that we resemble that more than we resemble the DNA test, which, of course, is something we can even hope to do, but there at least it has science behind it. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. And while Jamie, I see your hand, and I will come to you just shortly. But while Greg, you are on the line, if I could ask you one of the questions that I had for consideration later on, and I'd like to ask you what your opinion is now with the issues that you've just laid out for us. Do you see those as being policy revision issues, or is your view that we can tackle those issues through implementation process?
Well, this is Greg again. I guess I would have to go back and look at the policy as it's stated to see whether the policy could embrace, you know, such a wide variety of implementation as to allow us to solve those problems. And you know, having been a member of the esteemed policy and implementation working group, which started as the policy versus implementation working group, but then evolved, I'm a little concerned, you know, with the distinction. In this case, I think it's a question of more of who has to be involved for it to be called policy versus implementation. If the policy is either abstract enough or flexible enough to allow this to be implementation, then sure, it's implementation. But that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be reviewed by the community and participated in by the community largely the way that policy does, because I think this is a critical question. I think that's a better distinction to make, is that this is sufficiently important that it should be treated more like policy in terms of decision-making and who gets involved than it should be like implementation, because implementation often been used as a way to kind of justify a very light touch, if you will, in solving a problem. And by light touch, I also mean as few people touching it as possible, including sometimes those people who should be involved. So I'm terminally wary of using that distinction as a way to decide how to proceed. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. And to help in that regard, I'm going to defer to Aubrey and ask Aubrey if you can speak to where revisions, as a refresher, and for our members who this is their first participation in policy process, where the revisions to the applicant guidebook come in. Will be considered by our PDP, as I understand it, but want to confirm that, because to Greg's point, the policy recommendations from 2012 are extremely broad and vague. A community would get priority, and then there would be this evaluation process, which is then laid out in the applicant guidebook. So, Aubrey, can you quickly confirm for us that revisions to the applicant guidebook, where these processes are actually laid out, is work that we will be undertaking in the PDP list?
Hi, this is Avi speaking. Yes, to the extent that the AGB created policy, that because of the way the original policy was done, because of the style of policy at the time, where one did not get into specifics, one did not go down all the rabbit holes, et cetera. The AGB and the few documents that followed it did establish policy. I don't think it would be for us to get into, well, you know, they were using panels of three and we think panels of nine would be better. You know, the whole notion that policy and implementation are always bound together, just to a different degree, depending on where you are in a project, you know, we do have a policy mandate all the way through. So I'd say yes, but of course there's a caveat that it's, you know, it's got to be policy related. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. And Jamie, I promise I have not forgotten you. I want to read Robin's comment and make an ask of the work track. And then Jamie, You can have the floor. Robin wrote in the chat, because she's not where she can speak this morning, if we do want to continue the preference given to communities, we need to arrive at a shared definition of community. I agree with that. I know that is what the thing that we have been struggling with, which is why we asked for this history. The history, unfortunately, doesn't give us a very defined type definition of community. The history is very high level. So what I would ask is that if anyone in the work track can and is willing to take a stab at writing up for us and send the list a proposed definition of community that we could then chew on and go back and forth, I think that would give us at least a more better starting point than where we are at right now, because our discussions on definitions have been pretty blue sky. And so if we could get something, Robin, and if you have an idea, if we could get something written up and on the list, I think that would be terrific. And now with that said, Jamie, thank you for your patience. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Karen. Jamie Baxter from DocDay for the record. I think looking at this, these slides are helpful, and I think looking at the core values and ideas of the 2012 round are something that we certainly continue to agree with. Long been our thought that the community priority process got a little side-railed during implementation phase. And some of these core values and ideas seem to have been either watered down or pushed to the side a little bit in order to get to an endpoint. What also I think is important as we go forward, and it sounds like this is happening, is that implementation will work closely with the policy creators so that we don't get so off track and far from center on exactly what the CPE process is designed to accomplish. But I think it also is important to make a point here that whatever that process is needs to be completed and solidified before applicants are expected to submit their applications. For those of you who are not or were not community applicants, you may not have realized it, but a large part of the CPE process was not even developed until after applications were submitted, which, as you can imagine, makes it very challenging for an applicant when they're expecting that the guidebook is going to be the rule that is used. In fact, it wasn't 100% the rule that was used. There were additional procedures and policies, as we see it anyway, that were added when the CPE evaluators were hired. So having that closer link between implementation and policy, I think, is going to be crucial in this next subsequent procedures to make sure that it gets it right a lot better than it did the first time around. Another point I want to just bring up here, because it's often forgotten about, and that is that community applicants approach this whole process very differently than most standards in our experience. It took us several years to put together an application, and that's because it requires community engagement, and it requires you go out and talk to your constituents and understand what is going to be in the best interest of the community when you submit that application. A lot of the discussion around first come, first serve and you know, communities go first, what has to be added to that discussion is the time requirement, the external factors that are involved in creating community applications. I would beg to suggest that any of community applications that were submitted were done overnight. And so it's important that you keep that in the back of your mind as you talk about these community applicants, as we have been in these discussions, because it needs to be recognized that they approach this process differently than a standard applicant may as they go forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie. That is excellent input, and I would ask if you or any of the other community applicants who are participating in our work track, the more you can do to educate the rest of us who may not have participated in the community application, the more you can do to educate us on the list as to what that perspective is and what we should be aware of in considering that perspective, that would be very valuable and very much appreciated. See, Trang has asked a question. Jamie, are you referring to the implementation in the context of the criteria and evaluation methodology in the applicant guidebook, or in the context of execution, applying that criteria? Jamie?
Yes, this is Jamie again from DocDay. I think it's slightly a combination of both. Obviously, had the applicant guidebook been the only information that the evaluators were to use in the same fashion that it was the only information community applicants had in creating their application, I truly believe that the results would have been very different. But because the CE evaluators came onto the scene after applicants had actually submitted their applications and then developed the process that they intended to use, which appeared on the surface to create additional layers and rules and definitions, that community applicants didn't have the advantage of knowing in advance of submitting their applications, I also beg to question whether some of the approach would have been different for some applications. It's about providing transparency and predictability to the applicants before they actually have to submit their application. Because again, I want to use this as an opportunity to educate people who aren't familiar with the community process. Once you submitted your application, you could not make changes to it. And that was an understood policy and rule by community applicants, but what wasn't necessarily understood is that when the evaluators slightly shifted things, we didn't get to adjust to it. The same way, for example, applicants did when GAC advice came out against certain categories. We didn't get to adjust to the new procedures that were published by the evaluators after we submitted our application. And I think it's important that going forward, there should be no shifting whatsoever after the applicants submit their application. They should know exactly what information is going to be used, what procedures are going to be used to evaluate their application before they submit it. And that, I think, was a fault in the implementation because the contracted parties to do the evaluations were not hired and in place and had reviewed what they were going to do before we submitted our application.
Thank you, Jamie. I see several in chat are agreeing with you and taking my chair hat off. I very much agree with you that the playing field needs to be set before applications are taken next go around, so that there isn't a detriment to any particular applicant by a change in procedure halfway down the line. Jim has a comment that the character limits on responses also impeded community applicants' ability to explain the community approach. And that's probably implementation. That is true, and that is something that I think is on minds of both the PDP participants and ICANN staff is making sure we have the technology in place to handle these things going forward. Jamie, is that a new hand or is that the previous hand?
Yeah, it actually is a new hand. Thank you. In response to Jim's point, I think what's also important is that we're, as everybody probably knows, we're very far along in this process, but at no point have we actually really received an evaluation score or has it been considered what the intent and the purpose of our TLD really is. So I think that's something that if we're looking at those core values and ideas, that were set out for community applicants. We poured a lot of heart and soul into the responses. Forgive me, I believe it's all question 20 on the application. It may be 18 or it may be 20, I can't remember. But there was a lot of time and energy put into responding to those, which actually are not part of consideration from our perspective. They're not scored. They're not given points. If we're looking at and we're going on the core values and the ideas from the 2012 round, it seems like somewhere that needs to be put into consideration. And so it would be great if there was more room to actually respond to those, Jim, but it also is important that those are things that are considered at some point through the evaluation process in a more tangible manner.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate that. And we're looking at the clock. We are 6 minutes out now from our set time. And I'm going to ask one final question, and then we're going to turn it over to staff to introduce our next topic. is there anyone in today's call who does not believe that communities should receive any deferential treatment, in subsequent procedures? If so, could you speak now, show a tick mark next to your name, or type a chat? Otherwise, I'm going to move forward, we'll move forward, the leadership team of the work track, with the understanding that we do have consensus, at least for this group here today, that community is valuable and that we should continue to explore how to make it work better in the next rounds. Anybody against community differentiation? Okay. Robin has voiced that she is not convinced that we should have communities. To that end, if I could ask you, Robin, as we're running a little bit out on time today, and I apologize for not, I know you can't speak, if you could write up for the list your thoughts on that, and then we could get that discussion going on the list in the next 2 weeks, that would be terrific. That, and also if you have a definition of community, or if you think that our lack of definition of community is one reason that we should not have communities as a differentiated next time, I would appreciate that. So let's look forward to some good conversation on the list in the upcoming weeks. And with that, as we have 4 minutes left, Steve, Emily, if you could take us through the introduction you've prepared for us on our next topic, which begins with slide 7.
Thanks, Karen. This is Steve Chan from staff, and noting the short period of time, we'll keep this very brief. So moving on to slide 8, the accountability mechanisms, or I guess more broadly, the ability to appeal decisions made by the evaluators or actions of the program, was an issue raised by the discussion group, and so that carried forth into the issue report. I'm not going to read through this text, but just to note that there are, under the bylaws, ICANN's bylaws, there are three methods for accountability mechanisms. First is reconsideration, the second is independent review process, and the last is the ombudsman. This topic conveniently follows the community discussion because the reconsideration process was invoked for community priority evaluation in particular by a number of different applicants, both as the community or on the other side as the losing party, after a community is able to prevail in CPE. So moving to the next slide, it's slide 9. What the discussion group was trying to understand is whether the accountability mechanisms were sufficient, or if there are formal appeal mechanisms that are specific to the new GTLD program that might be needed. And so the evidence that they noted is that a number of CPE results triggered accountability mechanisms. They noted the lack of transparency in CPE and some of the other issues. There are also no appeal mechanisms relative to the other panels, say for technical or financial or the objection processes. And so the reliance was intended to be upon the accountability mechanisms that are a part of ICANN's bylaws. So moving to slide 10, it's just a link to the accountability mechanisms. And then finally on slide 11, it's just a discussion about whether or not there's policy development related to this topic. So the landscape has changed since the issues report was first drafted. The ICANN bylaws have actually been updated, and the accountability mechanisms now allow for substantive review, rather than simply procedural, of ICANN staff actions or board actions. And so in that light, the discussion might be a little bit different to determine by this working group whether or not specific appeal mechanisms are needed above and beyond the adjusted accountability mechanisms. And so if the working group were to go down that path, there's a couple of questions that they might want to consider, which is if there is appeal mechanisms, who is the final arbiter, who would provide these services? Would they be available for only certain aspects of the program, not others? What kind of guidelines would be implemented or developed to allow for these challenges? What safeguards would be needed? So as I noted, the landscape is a little bit different now, and so there's probably quite a bit for the working group to consider here, whether or not this needs specific appeal mechanisms for the new GTLA program. The one last thing I want to mention is that in the beginning, Karen had mentioned the post-delegation dispute resolution policies. That's not in these slides, so I'll just try to speak to that very shortly. If I recall correctly, I don't believe that was actually a topic identified by the discussion group. But in discussions with the Rights Protection Mechanisms PDP, it was decided that this working group would consider two of the PDDRP grounds, which is the RRDRP, the Registration Restrictions Dispute Resolution Policy, and then also the Public Interest Commitments Dispute Resolution Procedure. So I think those are just the two that we'll be looking at. The trademark one is going to fall underneath the PD, sorry, so many acronyms, the RPM's PDP. So we have the PICDRP was invoked. That's one instance of the post-delegation dispute resolution policy that the group can take a look at in determining whether or not they are effective and purpose-built for how we envision it to be carried out. So I'll just put a link to the page in the chat, and I think our time is up, essentially, but so I think we'll discuss this in the future. So that's just the basic introduction, and hopefully this will help for discussions at the next meeting. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that background. And yes, we are over our time, but I want to please encourage the conversation that's going on in chat about communities to continue on the list and look forward to that in the next 2 weeks. Our next meeting will be on Tuesday, June the 6th at 2000 UTC. And Robin will be leading that meeting, and we look forward to seeing you all there. But more importantly, or as importantly, look forward to the continued discussions on the list. Thank you, everybody, for your time today. Have a great rest of your day, evening, and we will speak with you soon. Goodbye.